Hello and welcome to this week's photography podcast. We're all refreshed after having a week off. And this week we've got another great guest. It's the one and only Andy Maguire. Hello, Andy. How are you, mate?
Hola. I'm very well. Thanks for having me. It's, yeah, it's great to be here. Cheers. In fact, cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheeky bit of vino. Cheers.
Yeah. Funnily enough, we were only mentioning you a couple of weeks back, weren't we, saying we must get him on. I mean, it's almost like we had it planned. Before we start, I guess we need to say condolences. Prince Philip passed away today, and that's very sad. But fair play to the guy, you know, 99 years old. If I get anywhere near that, I'm sure, you know, I'll be very happy, and I'm sure everyone else will. Well, not if I get near it, but if they get near it, they'll be happy as well. So, but yeah.
Obviously, when the news broke, you know, kind of then straight away, I didn't realise at the time. And then at the college, straight away, the flag was flying at half mast. And I kind of looked at it a bit strange. And then someone came up and said, oh, Prince Philip has died. And then it was about lunchtime and I put the radio on. And obviously, it's going to be all over the news now. But they was talking at the time. There was a royal correspondent on, just actually talking about his life and actually kind of what a great man he was. And hopefully, you know, his little faux pas, his little kind of gaffes along the way, hopefully that's what he's not going to be known as. He is going to be remembered for actually kind of what a fantastic sense of humour and everything that he's done, that the Duke of Edinburgh scheme and... But there was one thing he was saying, and I don't know if this is true, but I desperately want this story to be true. Apparently, they were talking about his sense of humour. And apparently, it was either during or shortly after the Queen's coronation. Apparently, he looked at her and just said, "Where'd you get that hat from?" Talking about the crown. And I must admit, when this guy said that, I literally laughed in the van to myself for about 3 minutes. I could just imagine, as I was sitting there, where'd you get that at? not in a Cockney accent, obviously, you know. It was delivered slightly better.
That'd be weird, you get that tit for.
He's from Lambeth, isn't he?
He might have been putting on his royal accent all along.
He could have been, yeah. He could have been from North London. Yeah. Who knows?
He was my favourite royal, definitely my favourite royal. And the one thing, because he came out with some absolute crackers, and the one thing that I remember that he said that made me laugh the most, there was a website that had all his like anecdotes on, and there was one where he was in Scotland, and he was touring somewhere or another where he spoke to someone, said, "Oh, what do you do?" And the guy said, "Oh, I'm a driving instructor." And he said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Well, tell me, how do you keep the locals off the sauce long enough to get them through the test?" And that was, I just thought that was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
I met him. I went to the, I did my Duke of Edinburgh Gold.
Did you? And,
yeah. So the school I went to, they were massive advocates for DV. We did bronze. At our school, it was almost like a rite of passage that, you went to school, you did D of E, and then you left school. That's how seriously they took it. And I on the gold, so we'd all left and gone to uni. We're all sort of 19 by now. And we all went to St. James's Palace, and there was like, honestly, the procedures, you had to, let's say the Duke was there at, say, midday. Mm-hmm. We had to get there for like 8:30, something like that. And we had to be briefed in one room to the next about etiquette, how to stand, how to be addressed, how to literally shut up and not say a thing. Like, you're not even allowed to like cough or sneeze or anything like that. And it was the most formal thing I've ever done. And what he did was, they were like, we stood in semicircles, and there were probably about, I don't know, 50 people in one of these. Well, you know, have you ever been in one of those rooms that's just the most grand thing you've ever seen? Gold-plated roof, yeah. And marble everywhere.
Darren's lounge, you're talking about.
Yeah, basically, I think that was his conservatory or something. And, he was just, just a real sort of chatty guy. You know, when you think about the royals, you think, oh, they've got to do a duty and they've got to go and see... Got to go and see the kids who have just done the award. But he wasn't, he was quite jovial. He was quite, it was almost as if he was really proud that all of us had finished our gold and got to the palace to get our award. And that was, I mean, I was 18 or 19. I didn't really understand the gravity of it or the importance of it. But my mum and dad came and they were like proper fanboying him. Mm. And yeah, so my mum still talks to me about to this day about it's like the best day of her life.
Oh, so, that's pretty cool. Oh,
brilliant.
Yeah, but he was a really nice guy. And yeah, you weren't allowed to ask him a question. He would basically move from semicircle to semicircle. And he'd sort of say, oh, so, yeah, it was knackering, was it? And we'd all go, yeah, yeah. And he'd talk to one person in the group. And it was my mate he spoke to. And he said, oh, so how did you get on? And he was like, yeah, it was fine. It was really good. So, like, I think he thought he was going to be beheaded if he said the wrong thing or something like that.
Straight to the tower.
Yeah, basically. But that was a wicked experience. And Duke of Edinburgh, I don't think there's... I don't know. Can you do it at any age? I don't know. If you can...
I don't know.
I'd massively recommend doing it. We had to do, like, a residential thing. We had to do loads of different, like, a little week's placement. We had to do a week's volunteering. I went up to the North York coast and I repaired a footpath in Robin Hood's Bay. And I got signed off for that. It was just basically a piss up for a week. And yeah, loads of other cool stuff like that. Then we did the expedition with me and a group of mates. And yeah, so it was wicked. Definitely cool. Recommend the DV.
I'll get us all signed up.
You should do it. Yeah.
So in other news, we passed a year.
Oh, can we? Before we talk about this, sorry, can we just rewind? Because we have... Obviously, we're talking about Prince Philip and mourning his death, but we should also celebrate a new life coming into the podcast.
Absolutely,
and I think we should do it. We should. The person who's now a granddad should put their hand up. Over to you, okay. Mr. Griff.
Yeah. Well, as I said earlier in the preamble. It's kind of weird because it's one of those things you sort of, oh, you pass a milestone birthday or something. You really don't feel any older. It's just kind of weird to have that formal label and think, shit, I'm actually, you know, I'm in the twilight of my years now, officially.
Granddad Griff.
Yeah. So up till now, my dad has been sort of the granddad of the family. And when my daughter was a little kid, and you've got a couple of grandparents, so they get different names. So my mum is Nana, and my dad got called Grumpy because he was most of the time. So I said, right, I want to inherit that title. So now he's Great Grumpy and I'm Grumpy.
Brilliant.
I like that.
Yeah.
I can live with that quite nicely. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you. I didn't do a thing.
Long awaited. My mum kept asking me, is he a granddad yet? Is he a granddad? No, he's not. Well, I'll let you know as soon as he is. Long awaited.
Yeah. So, well, I'm hoping to go down and meet young Jake in the next few days. So that'd be good.
You kind of did do something in the first place. It wouldn't be possible without you. So do you
know? No, that was the milkman.
Oh, dear.
Didn't know Holly was like really ginger.
But I remember, like, this was obviously, this is going back, I don't know, 20 years ago, something like that. And there was me and one of my young boys at the time, who was probably like 6 or 7 or something like that, and my dad. And I think one of my boys said to me, Dad, oh, granddad, can you sleep over tonight? Because he'd come up and visited for the day. And my old man went, no, he said, your dad won't let me stay. And Jack went, yeah, but he said, I have to do what my dad says. He said, but you're his dad, so he's got to do what you say. And if you want to stay over, he can't say nothing. And I just thought that was great logic from a kid, you know. So no matter how old I was, I still had to take notice of my dad.
So we should point out, actually, James isn't here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So James isn't here this week. Hopefully he'll be back next week, but he's not here. And it's been a year. So the first podcast was the 28th of March last year. So we've been going a year now, which is just crazy.
How the hell do we still find things to talk about a year on?
Wow, it's all the same stuff regurgitated. basically.
What was the original lineup again?
Us four.
It was four, wasn't it? Yeah. And then
and then James and Maddie came along two weeks in, was it? I think
two or three weeks in.
And enhanced it greatly.
I don't know if you remember, but I thought we have one guest, like James and then Mally, or Mally and then James. And I remember you invited James and Mally to come on together. And I had reservations at the time, thinking, oh, six is going to be probably too many. We're going to be talking over the top of one another. So I'm so pleased that I didn't go with my own gut reaction, because as soon as they came on together, six was the magic number, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, just worked, it did. So,
apart from James, who can be a pain in the ass, but we love him dearly.
he's grinching tonight.
He is, yeah. He's off stealing candy off of babies or something, I'm not sure.
if I remember rightly, was the idea conceived on a bench at Southwold Beach? When we were, after we'd finished Sunrise, is that where we had the idea, the three of us?
But I remember the original idea being conceived with Gary, just me and Gary, at Wick and Fen. You spoke to me about this at Wick and Fen, Gal. And then the idea got resurrected again at Southall with Jamie.
And then, originated.
Where did it originally originate?
Originated on top of Stanage Edge with Mally and Tim. And I said, don't say that the wrong way. I said, we should get together a group of us. And you guys were obviously in the group. We should get together a group of us and we should do a podcast. And we should do it like, you know, so there's a collective of us. And we've all got similar interests and we're all whatever. And then that kind of just sort of dropped down a bit, and then when I spoke to you two about it, that's when it really took off, and that's when it's all sort of, you know, kind of come to fruition. And I don't want to be too self-congratulatory amongst us all, but it's been brilliant, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
It really has, yeah.
What I don't understand is how I got roped in, because there's you lot hanging around on the flatlands.
Because I said, I'm not doing it without Dave.
There's this knob in North Wales who hangs around in the mountains.
Now, what happened was we said we need someone sensible, otherwise it's just going to
be... We needed the intellect. Of course you did.
Yeah. And that's where you came in. So,
Worldly-wise.
Yeah. So it's been a year. Anyway, so let's get into some subjects.
And I think we should just say, if anybody has been watching from day one, thank you ever so much. Mm. It does mean quite a lot, actually, for people that watch week after week.
Yeah,
I can't remember if I watched the first ever one, but back when we could only go out a little short distance from the house, I would go on local jogs and local runs, and I'd listen to the podcast on a run, and I'd just be like creasing. I'd just be like laughing my head off at, like, you know, some of the shite that you lot would talk about.
Oh my goodness!
And it's just brilliant. And I think it's a really good masterstroke to stick it on Spotify, because I listen to it on Spotify occasionally, probably 50-50 actually. Mm. So I don't always watch the YouTube. I normally, you know, have the Spotify on the podcast, like as a podcast.
The very first one. In fact, it might have been two. We did it over Skype, if you remember. We didn't do it on Zoom. And the audio was, oh, God awful, really, really poor. But then as soon as we came onto Zoom, and then it worked out how to do separate audio and all of that, the audio's got better. It's just the chat's just give a shit.
Just before we get into photography stuff, can I ask you a quick question? Do you watch it back? Do you watch and listen to it back every week?
Yeah. We normally get a version to make sure we're okay with it before we release it. So a pre-release version from Gary on the chat.
Yeah.
And then if any of us is around to watch it, we can watch it through if there's anything in there. But to be fair, in the early days, it was probably something that we would go through. But nowadays, just go for it, Gary. Whatever. Mm. Just release it.
I must admit, I tell you what annoys me is I keep in my YouTube suggestions, I just watch a bit of a video sat in the conservatory with my feet up. my suggestions, half a dozen pubcasts. Like, piss off, I'm not interested. Because obviously YouTube doesn't equate it with me in it. So yeah. It's weird. YouTube thinks I'd be interested in this drivel.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? So, to answer your question, do I watch it? Yeah, about 8 times while editing it. Yeah, over and over again to go, oh, God, I've missed a f*** out there, or I've left something that, you know, libelous in there. So, yeah, usually it's, about 8 times for me. Anyway, let's get on to some topics. And obviously, while we've been away, it's been sort of Freedom Day, as Jamie's dubbed it, and we've all been allowed to leave our houses and travel for photography. So how's that been? Have we all enjoyed ourselves? What we've been up to?
Yeah, it's been great to get out, hasn't it? At last, just to be able to drive from our house. You know, that was the biggest frustration for me, was that I don't go far generally. You know, if I travel, I'll travel to a local woodland or to a local beach or whatever. But just for the fact that I couldn't drive to a woodland that was 15 minutes away, just, you know, was so frustrating. And considering the snow we had and some of the foggy mornings that we had, oh my God, but now we can do it. You know, so I'm not going to be traveling around the countryside. I'm still going to keep relatively local, but I can still, I can drive now. And that's the biggest plus, really. So, yeah, I was up at the beach first thing on Freedom Day, sunrise on the North Norfolk coast. Just fantastic to sort of witness that sunrise. Although it was just a tad windy, as you said earlier, just a little bit. And then Holm Fen on the Tuesday in a vlog that will be released by the time you're watching this. So...
I've seen that. You've got a little project going on, haven't you?
I've got my project, yeah. This is a project I've been talking about for quite some time. I really wanted to get a project where I could start to map Holm Fen, sort of break it down into, you know, the chunks and tell people.
So you can find your way out?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Drop little sticks and that markers behind. So for when I bring you around next time, I'll know where to get you lost. No, I wanted to build a guide, really, that sort of maps out Holm Fen and breaks it down into chunks to sort of show where different, from a photographic perspective, where the better places are, where some of the particular trees are that I've shot in the past, where to park, and just form a guide so if anybody is interested to go there, they can just really, you know what to do when they turn up, rather than, because it's a big place and you can easily get lost in there, as we
you've made it famous now, haven't you?
Well, yeah, there's
with
a lot.
With great power comes responsibility.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, and hence in the vlog tomorrow, I've made a point about the respect that everybody has to have for the place, in terms of, because it is it's an SSSI, so you have to be careful. You got to respect the wildlife, the fauna, you know, everything about the place. There's biodiversity projects going on there as well, so it's something that has to be protected. So, albeit I'm waving the flag and saying, yeah, come down, it's a great place to take pictures. You know, you can't just rock up and, you know, run freely through the place, whacking your tripod wherever you want to. You've got to respect it. So, you know, I've got to get that balance right in what I'm putting across to sort of get people there to enjoy it for what it is, but not to take advantage of it, really. So, yeah, I'm quite looking forward to that going out tomorrow. And that's going to keep me busy, to be fair, over the summer months. It's going to be something to focus on. So I'm looking forward
to it. It's funny, though, isn't it? Because that's something... It's a constant debate amongst landscape photographers as to what extent should we be sharing our locations. And there's very often quite heated debates on various social media channels where people say, oh, you know, you shouldn't be... if I take a picture and somebody says, oh, where was that taken? And you know, oh, you shouldn't tell them. And there you are, creating a resource specifically for photographers. I've got exactly the same sort of thing on my website in Snowdonia and Anglesey. So when I do a video, very often there's a link in the video to exactly where it was, where you park, all that stuff. And for me, it's not up to me to protect the landscape. It's there. If a photographer goes there, I'm not responsible for what they do when they're there. But because 99% of people are sensible and mature, I like to be able to encourage people to go and enjoy it and get the same enjoyment out of it as I do. And I think what you're doing there, Jamie, is very laudable, and good on you, mate.
Dave, I noticed that you have some sort of ambassador thing now in the bottom corner of your videos. What's that about?
It's a scheme being run by the National Park kind of funded by Welsh government to promote the area. There's only one other, there's about 400 of us. There's one other that I know specifically is Nick Livesey, is a gold ambassador. And what he had to do is a series of educational modules around culture, language, geology, wildlife, okay. geography, the demographics. You have to really know the area really well to pass the tests. And you've got bronze, silver and gold standard. So I and Nick went to gold standard. It's just a promotional mechanism where, you know, we can, it allows me to badge myself up as an official ambassador. So I've got a badge and a car sticker. So when my car's in a lay-by in Snowdonia, it's less likely to have the tyres let down because it's got a Welsh sticker in it.
I knew there'd be an ulterior motive somewhere.
So that's what it's about. It's just about getting normal people who live and work and use the area to also be ambassadors for it. And get involved in sort of, you know, voluntary work like building paths and litter picks and all sorts of bits and pieces like
well
that.
Well done, mate.
It's just putting a bit back into the community.
Yeah, very selfless. That's very selfless, yeah.
Well, actually, I really enjoyed it because I learnt a lot doing the course. I mean, you know, okay, I know the area really well, but there was quite a lot of detail. Also, in particular, a lot about the culture because I've been learning Welsh over the last couple of years to sort of, you know, throughout my life, I've known the odd word or phrase, but not really been fluent. So I set out to become fluent. I've been doing it for about 12 months now, and I'm reasonably fluent. So a lot of the course was in Welsh, so that was kind of good fun to do that as well.
Do you live in a Welsh-speaking area, Dave?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Like,
yeah.
Is your village, are your neighbours natively, is their mother tongue Welsh?
Yes. Yeah. It's everywhere you turn. A lot of my local customers, Welsh is the first language, so I'll be in their offices and they'll pick the phone up and it's just straight into Welsh.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's actually quite amazingly different. So there's very distinct dialects, North and South Wales. By that, not just dialect, but vocabulary. So the word for milk, for example, is entirely different, North and South. On Anglesey...
Is it like... Milk. milk.
Yeah, something like that, mate.
It's German, wasn't it?
I thought that was Jamaican.
Anyway, carry on.
Oh, bloody hell. On Anglesey, very specifically, it's very anglicised. So they call it Wenglish. They'll be talking Welsh, and it's just completely interchangeable. But if you go into the mountains, say around Bethesda and some of the really core, you know, quarrying areas, it's very, very Welsh. It's completely different to Anglesey. So, you know, you only have to travel 10 miles and there's noticeable differences. Mm. I just have an affinity for where I live and wanted to do something useful about it.
Oh, it's actually really interesting because you can tell when you go to Wales, the sheep make a different sound. I mean, just a normal sound from when you go to Yorkshire. Because when you go to Wales, they go, ma, isn't it? Afterwards, you can hear, if you're really listening, isn't it?
You spend a lot of time with sheep, Gary.
Yeah. Tell us more about your sheep encounter, Gal.
I don't have any. I actually genuinely don't have any. I don't know what to say. Andy, you went out, didn't you, and crossed the whole of the Malverns or something, didn't you? Crazy.
Yeah. So the first few days when we were released, when they released the hounds, I was out every day, but haven't actually been out since then. But yeah, basically, Laura was doing a charity. It was the end of her charity. She was doing 10,000 steps a day, and we thought the best thing to do would be to end it with a monster mammoth walk of the whole of the Malverns. And we started, for anyone that knows the Malverns, we started at Chase End Hill, which is in the Gloucestershire, Herefordshire end, and then we just walked north until we got to End Hill. So there's 18 hills in total. And because we recorded it all on the watch, we looked at the stats afterwards, and the elevation was crazy. It was like as high as, you know, climbing one of the Welsh 3000s. It was, I think our elevation by the end of it was 3,800 or something like that feet. So it was anyone who says hill walking is easy deserves a slap in around the chops, because it's not. Just because they're hills does not make them any less. You shouldn't respect them any less. They're bastards, a lot of them. So it was a really good walk, and that wasn't really about photography. That was just about getting from start to finish, and that was a really good walk, to be fair.
How many miles? And just
It was about 10. About 10 miles.
Okay.
Some people, if they're mad enough, will go there and back. So that's obviously 20 mile and, you know, two Ben Nevises or two Snowdons. Mm. So.
And how long did that take you, Andy?
That was at like a nice speed. That was about 6.5-7 hours. So we stopped for lunch a few times, and because it's me, stopping for photos and taking pictures of grass and stuff like that. And then, you could probably do it if you really got a wriggle on, probably in about 4 hours, something like that. Mm. So if you really want to. But it's a great walk. And in normal life, I'd massively recommend it, because there's pubs along the way, there's cafes, there's so many picnic spots. It's great views, great for photography. And there's, you know, it's just a really, because it is, it's like a little Disneyland mini national park in the middle of civilization. Mm. It's
you've invented a, really nice a new spot. Extreme sport there. It's, you know, extreme pub crawling.
Yeah, basically, I reckon you could do at least 6 or 7 pubs, something like that, without having to go too far off the route. So it could be on.
Thing is, though, here's what I don't get is that you walk the 10 miles. What did you do when you got to the end? Because I've been thinking about this, like, because there's where I went the other week or the other day is a walk, and it's about 7 miles the whole walk from end to end. But then once you get to that end, well, you can't, my car's right at the other end. So what did you do for the 10 miles? Did you park up and then drive back in another, like take two cars and
come? Exactly,
what?
Yeah. So
that's what you did. Right,
because it's a linear walk. It's not a circular route. Mm. You either need to get a taxi or you need to use Shanks's pony, really. It's you need to walk it if you haven't got two cars. So what we did was, park the first car at the end point, then parked to jump cars, and then got into the into Laura's car, parked at the first hill, and then collected the car at the end of the day.
Sensible. Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't... We used to drink, like, you know, our local was only, well, you've been there, Gal, our local's kind of only like a less than about a 90-second walk from where we are. And we used to go around there every Friday and every Saturday, not during the all day, but we used to go around there Friday and a Saturday or Friday and a Sunday. And it was very much kind of a part of our life, you know, kind of seeing our friends for a couple of hours every week. And do you know what? I really don't miss it that much. But what I really do miss is when you do go out for a nice walk, just popping into an unfamiliar pub and just kind of, you know, getting a beer, sitting out in the beer garden, only having one, maybe two, and then kind of carrying on with a walk. That I really miss. I do like a nice beer garden, you know, whilst out for a walk.
Yeah. Mm. There's a couple of amazing beer gardens in the Malverns. It's literally built into the one of them's called The Chase. And it's built into the side of the hill. So if you're lucky enough to get the top, you know, patio, prime real estate, if you can get that bench, you've got the whole view, like, and you can stay there for a session. So it's a really good pub called The Chase.
I'll tell you what, to put beer and walking into perspective, my dad, when he was a rock climber, spent every single weekend in Snowdonia driving up. He was working in Kidderminster at the time. So he'd jump on his motorbike, head up the A5, and him and his mates would camp, usually somewhere it was usually Ogwin, and they'd be up round sort of Glyndebach, something like that. They would walk all the way down to Bethesda to go to the pub, get absolutely bladdered, and walk all the way back up and find their way back to their tents. Blimey. And I said to my dad, he said, no, it was normal. It's just what we did. It was, and they would, they'd also be in Cwm Crafnant and walk over Crimpiai down the back of Caffi Siabod to go drinking in Capel. So they'd be walking 3 or 4 miles over a hill, few pints, and then walk back.
Christ.
Unbelievable.
I think I'll stick to Darren's 90-second walk to the pub. That works much better for me, I'm not going to lie. I went out, I was saying to you guys, I went out to Lathkill Dale, and that was about a 6 mile, 5.5, 6 mile round. Well, it wasn't round because I walked there and walked back. But on the way there, you park up in the car park and you're like, oh, this is, yeah, it's lovely. And you're sort of walking down this hill. You don't really pay any attention to the hill because, you know, you've just got there and you're thinking, oh, where's the stream? Anyway, walked up to the... I did start to think, how far is this bloody waterfall? But I got there eventually, walked back, and then got back to where I had to walk up the hill, and I thought I was going to die. Honestly, I was like, I had to stop. I must have been 10 times up this short, winding road that leads up the hill. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to... just going to have a minute. Yeah. And then I think about 3/4 of the way up the hill, I thought, nah, just leave me here. I'm just done for. And then I unfortunately sort of saw the houses by the car park. I went, oh no, I'm going to be all right now. So yeah, but you do recover, don't you, quite quickly actually. It's surprising, you're walking up the hill and you think you're going to die, but when you actually get to the top and you stop, yeah, and you actually like, oh, I'm all right now, I'm not too bad. So yeah, but yeah,
not when you're not used to it, it knocks you out. I remember actually, Andy, when we went to the Malverns several years ago, when I came for that weekender, and we went to the Beacon, and that's not, I don't know, how high is the Beacon? What's the elevation of that?
I think it's 420 metres, something
420,
like that.
420, something like that. And we walked it in the dark. We got there in the dark and walked up. I was knackered by the time I got to the top of there. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I was blowing as well, but because I'd organised it, I couldn't show anyone how knackered I was. I was dying. Yeah.
I think because we're all together and therefore we're all at a pace. If you're on your own, you might just ramble along, but we're all trying to get up there at a pace. But I was absolutely shattered when I got to the top of there.
To this day, Jay, that was the best sunrise I think I've ever seen on the Malverns. That's
phenomenal.
That was ridiculous.
That was a treat. You couldn't have laid that on any better than that.
I didn't even, because you vlogged it, didn't you? I never did. Yeah. But there was, like, just to paint the picture, it was a cloud inversion the whole way around us, pretty much. Say cloud inversion, it wasn't really that. It was more of a really low fog all around us. I don't know if that's the same thing or not. And but instead of just getting that low misty fog, there was literally ripply fog, wasn't there? Yeah. And then I've got a hill in the middle distance called Breeden Hill, which is in just at the edge of the Cotswolds near Evesham in South Worcestershire. And then the sun just came straight over it and it just lit up the whole sky completely red. And it was epic, really. Yeah, was the best sunrise I've ever seen, I think.
Well, for a fenboy, mate, that was just like totally, you know, magical. I'd never seen anything like it. You know, to be at an elevation and actually see, you know, down above the fog or the mist or whatever it was just absolutely amazing. Yeah,
yeah, it was nice. Cracking. It was good.
I remember watching that video. In fact, I don't think it was yours, Jamie. I think it was Paul Compton's. And there was bits where you were picking out the trees from the mist as the mist was clearing. And it looked amazing. I have to say, it did look really amazing. I did really want to go on one of those because you ran a couple, didn't you? You did a couple.
Well, yeah, I haven't. Every year I think, oh, I won't bother doing it this year. But I think I will keep doing it every sort of Halloween, sort of last weekend of October after the clocks go back or forward, whichever one it is. And so we all get an extra hour in bed. And so it's like a 7 o'clock sunrise or something nice like that. And I think I will try and organise something because it is good fun and it's really nice to get people together, as I don't remember how that even feels anymore.
No. That was the first time I think I found your YouTube channel was it the previous year when you went, when Chris Sale went with you, because I used to watch Chris on YouTube and then I watched his vlog when he was with you and then I picked up your channel and from then on. So was that the first year you'd done it when Chris was there, or had you done it before
I think I think it was and it's quite a good networking event, actually, if you want to look at it like a business, you know, kind of environment. It's good to literally meet other vloggers and other people can see other how other people work. And that's what's great about meetups, isn't it? you can meet people, and surprisingly, and you can, and even if you weren't even there, you can watch the vlogs of someone else through someone else's lens, and they could capture something completely different or exactly the same. And it's, which is quite rare, but yeah, that's the best thing about meetups, is just how different how different everyone's results are.
Mm. Yeah. Hopefully we can get back to meetups this year sometime.
Well, let's hope so. No reason why not. Things seem to be moving in the right direction, don't they? So there's no reason why we can't.
Yeah.
We'll Dave's in with his... Do you know what? Every week I have to cut this out. Every single week.
It's a pub.
Week.
You have to have nuts in a pub.
So you got nuts.
So let's move on now. And I've got written down here, reverse gas, Darren. So do you want to elaborate on that, mate?
Yeah, well, I was sitting in that chair that you can probably just see behind this chair here the other week. And I was on the laptop and I was just kind of miles away. I don't know why it kind of popped into my head, but I just thought about my old Canon M6 that I used to vlog with. And I just thought, you know, I wonder what, I wonder if I could sell that to M. You're having a laugh, ain't you? And them f***ing nuts.
Oh, yes. Could be a nut as well.
Jesus Christ.
I'll stick to the raisins.
I'm thinking, I'll get through this.
There's a chipmunk in the corner.
Yeah.
It's anyway. A pub. You have to have nuts in a pub. You're lucky I haven't got pork scratches.
Anyway, where were we? Go on. Sorry, Dan.
So I was just thinking, I'm never going to use that camera again. And I had three lenses with it as well. But the camera was... I put it down as well used, which it was, and there was a crack across the back of the screen. And I generally thought, you know, they might even say £50 or no, we're not interested. And so I put the camera and the three lenses on this kind of quote, and it came back. I was more than happy with what they offered me for it. And then once I'd done that on the laptop, and I started looking at the shelf that's over there, and I just thought, crikey, there is so much gear on here that I just don't use. And I mean, I've got rid of my drone. I mean, that drone's not been up in the air since Norway 2018.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, why am I keeping stuff like that? But I just, I think once I started to catalogue it, and actually seeing the value of everything, I just thought, oh, I'm crazy to keep this any longer, and I just couldn't believe how easy it was, and literally MPB. I mean, you know, because you've used them before, Gail. I mean, they sent a courier to my house, picked everything up, and then I thought, oh, what the crux will be? They'll offer me quite a reasonable price online, and then when they get everything, it'll be like, oh well, it's not quite worth, you know, what you, the condition you said it was, and then they'll try and knock me down. And in fact, it was the complete opposite. They even emailed me and said, actually, there's a couple of items where you put was good when we valued them at excellent. So they increased their offer a little bit. So yeah, it was really good the other weekend to have this kind of huge clear out of stuff that was just devaluing and just collecting dust.
It's weird how we hold on to things, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
I've done it before, and I'm sure everyone does it. They, like you say, you've got all that stuff there, and you think, like with the drone is a classic example, you think, oh, I might use that one day, but in all reality, you probably never will. So you might as well get some money back on it. And I mean, I've just done the same. I've been a bit stupid, really. I bought, I don't know, probably a few podcasts ago, I mentioned that I bought a new 24mm f1.4 Sigma Art lens. And I looked at it, and it was sat on my camera, and I did one video, I think, of in here, and I thought it'd be brilliant for street photography. And actually, looking at it, it's not 24 mil was way too wide for street photography, and that was 600 odd quid sitting there doing nothing, and I just thought, nah. So I went to MPB. I mean, I lost a good 100 odd quid on it, fair, you know, which is my own fault for buying it in the first place, but I'm going to just probably pick up a couple of Samyang lenses instead. Because I've been looking into them, and the quality, you know, for the price is just crazy. So why sit there with a big, heavy, you know, call it a street photography lens that I'm never going to use for street photography, when I can buy a couple of cheaper Samyang lenses that are cheap as chips and much lighter and will do the job.
Yeah. So. I must admit, I've used MPB a lot and Wex, and both of these outfits are really dependent on their reputation, because the minute they start ripping photographers off, the word will soon get round. So I think it's really good what you've just said, Daz, that, you know, they've been really fair and honest with you.
Yeah.
Because then you share it with other photographers. You know, it becomes a conversation to be had. I haven't made my mind up about it yet. I'm honestly thinking of selling my Pro Glass, because I'm using sort of high-end kit stuff and I'm very happy with it. And I haven't had my Pro Glass on the camera in months.
Really?
Because it's so light.
Yeah.
Is that one of the main reasons? Because it's so light.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a walking about 14-150, so that's a 28-300 equivalent. That just for walking about, and I walk around with it on an EM5. If I'm going out to do something sensible, I've got the EM1, I've got a 12-50, I've got a 75-300, and I've got a couple of wide angles, a 9-18 and a 7.5. I've got a 35 prime, and those are the lenses that I'm using, and I'm using them regularly. And I honestly haven't taken my Pro Glass off the shelf. Well, you know, that's thick end of £1,000 just sat there doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, because we're going to talk about this, I think, in a little while. But I went out the other day and I stuck it up on Twitter, I processed a couple of waterfall photography images. And I took them with the 24-105. It's not a G Master, it's just a G, but it's a decent lens. And I almost felt it was too sharp. When I was processing it, I felt it's too much. It's too perfect, if that makes sense. It needs to, I was almost like trying to like lose a bit of sharpness here and there, because it was too much. And I think sometimes we've had this conversation before, haven't we, where we said, oh, you know, people say that the kit doesn't matter, and, you know, but I think you get to a stage actually where you think, I don't want it to look over perfect. I want it to look real.
Shit.
No, do you know what I mean? No, I want the image to look real. I don't want it to look like it's been pushed through 15 sharpness filters. And I think that's what you get when you start with the pro lenses, especially with the cameras now, because they do, you know, all this sort of, you know, they've got 42 million pixels and X number of sharpening things in camera, and you can go and do a load more high pass filters and all of this stuff. And it actually, I don't know if that is detracting a little bit from the photography rather than adding to it. It's making it too perfect, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Anyone?
Well, as I say, I've found that my kit glass, it's not entry level kit glass. It's mid range to upper, but I certainly haven't looked at it and thought, oh, I've got to put my pro lens back on. And that's the long and short of it. And so for me, it's really difficult to justify lugging an extra couple of pounds around.
Mm. It's not the lens or the camera at the end of the day. It's the photographer, isn't it? If you're getting it right in camera and you're getting your focus points and you're shooting everything as you should be, then the shot's going to come out well, irrespective really of the lens. Yeah, okay, it might be slightly sharper, but as you say, is it really worth it?
But don't you think it's the style as well, though, isn't it? It depends on the style of photography sometimes and the mood. So if you're talking about, say, street photography, that's really nice to have a little bit of noise in the image. Mm. I think, you know, that kind of like, you know, that real kind of gritty that photo that, that Gary produces when he does his street, I think that's really nice. And sometimes if you're looking at James's photos as well of the lakes, when it's kind of black and white, and quite frankly, you don't really want that to be sharp, you know, you just want that to be really kind of dark and moody. So I think it has its place. I mean, I think Pro Glass definitely has its place, but it's possibly not the be-all and end-all, depending on the style of photography.
And that, and also Pro Glass as well, at its most extreme, it's just as shit as anything else. Like, for example, if I shoot, because I've got the old 85mm 1.2 that's a bit of a house brick. I don't know if you've seen that, because I'm a Canon shooter. Mm. And it's, if I shoot everything at 1.2, which I love doing for a number of reasons, but the vignetting is ridiculous. It's, so the corners are horrible. The fringing is horrible. I get purple and greens over everything that's contrasty. But I don't care, because it's usable. Because it's the effect that I want. I can correct what I want to correct if I want to correct it. And if anyone wants to pixel peep and say that's not good enough, then, you know, that's up to them. But I think, you know, if you want to shoot a pro lens wide open, it's not going to be as good as it would be at f4, f8, f11. So, you know, you've just got to live with that and, you know, work it into your style.
Well, it's interesting because I've been looking at these Samyang lenses, and I watched this review from a guy called Dustin Abbott. Have any of you heard of him? He's quite big in the sort of photography reviewing. He's an American guy, but he was saying about this 45mm 1.8, and he was saying that this isn't quite right with it, and like you say, there's a bit of vignetting on it, and there's some chromatic aberrations on it, and the bokeh around the edges. And he said, and you'd think that you'd look at this and say, well, why am I buying this? But the point is it gives a feeling. The lens has got a feel about it that's sort of older, more classic sort of feel to it. And I think that's sometimes something that people miss. You start taking all these things out and you get this like super sharp, perfectly, you know, no vignetting and no chromatic aberration, and everything's, you know, no barrel distortion, no issues. And you've got a very, like, sterile, sort of very sharp and sort of almost like an unreal image, especially like when you're saying, like, for street photography or something. You want that character from a lens. You want those imperfections. They make the shots. You go out and you look at film photography or shots taken on older lenses where you've got that sort of real classic feel about it. That's because the lenses don't represent the scene as much as or as well as lenses do these days. There are issues with it, and that's what gives that character to it.
Yeah.
You know? Again, silence.
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think it just goes back to perhaps what I said. I think that the lens can also suit just the style of photography, you know. So I think
the bottom line is that if you, whatever you point your camera at, if you point at an interesting subject and you compose it well, the gear then becomes completely irrelevant as long as you can expose it correctly. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the long and short of it. And I think that, you know, people measuring the size of their lens when they're stood alongside each other, you know what I mean? They tend to be the people who put up the pictures that don't engage you very much.
Well, look at woodland photography as a good example. You know, we dream of fog and mist. We don't want sharpness with that. We want mood and atmosphere. So it doesn't matter, actually, if your images are sharp at all. In fact, it's the reverse. You don't want them to be sharp. So, you know, sometimes, as you say, at street, there's a mood. Woodland, there's a mood. You know, it's got to be fit for purpose, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what Andy was just saying about kind of pixel peeping. And when we had Stuart McGlennon on, you know, a few weeks ago talking about printing, you know, I mean, obviously I'm just looking at the images that I've got around here, and you can get away with, I won't say you can get away with murder, but once you start printing, all this pixel peeping kind of goes away, you know, and depending on what kind of paper you're printing on, you wouldn't have a clue what lens had been used and how sharp that is, and You know, so I think, yeah, I think sometimes it's, once you, if you're viewing an image on screen, I mean, I do it, you know, I don't, I mean, it's not only for like wildlife, you know, I'll see a, you know, a wildlife image come up and I won't lie, you know, and I'll pinch the screen and think, crikey, that is really sharp, that's really nice, you know. That's the only time that I pixel peep. And that's not to be critical, it's just that some of these images are so good, you know, when you just see, you know, the very fine hairs on the birds kind of around his eyelashes, or you want to pinch in and kind of really see it. But when it comes to landscape, it doesn't bother me. I don't pixel peep there.
I'm different though, because for me with landscape, if I'm shooting rock, which I shoot a lot of in the mountains, I want that so crispy you could grate cheese on it.
Mm. And a bit like your stomach.
Yeah, thank you very much. But the point is, I'm able to achieve that with glass that is not considered pro, because the sort of images that I've been posting over the last 6 months have mostly been kit glass, and they're sharp enough for me to look at it and go, yeah, I'm happy with that. Because otherwise I'd be putting the heavy lens back on. I wouldn't be thinking of selling it. So, you know, it isn't just a case of, oh, you've got some glass and you can't achieve what you want to. If you work at it, you can. You know, it means that people that genuinely can't afford pro glass shouldn't feel left out, or that they can't achieve super sharp images, because you still can.
Yeah.
Just copy some of the days.
Did you see the photo of Prince Philip that the royal family released today?
Yeah.
It was, he was all in his, was he an RAF? Was he Navy? I don't know if he's Army or...
Navy, wasn't he?
Navy, yeah. And there's a picture of him, there's a portrait of him, I don't know how old he was, but it just is just such a brilliant portrait. And it's a little bit, I mean, I don't think, looking at that picture, I'm not saying you could take that with a blooming potato, I don't think you could take that with your phone, but it doesn't look like it's taken at 1.2. It doesn't look like it was, you know, 100,000 strobes and things like that. It's just a, I wouldn't say a bog standard portrait, because that's unfair to the photographer, but it's just a very well executed photograph. And I think well executed photographs don't need an explanation, they don't need context, they don't need and that's what I'm after with my photography. I almost wish I didn't have to write a blurb, but I always do. I always have to write, this was taken this time, blah blah blah, I felt like this, blah blah blah. I wish I didn't have to. I wish the photo did the talking for me. And I think the best photographers out there can just take a photo and just, here it is, here's the photo, you know, don't need to say anything about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well said.
Yeah.
Quite agree.
So let's move away now from photography, because we, you know, we don't want too much photography on here, do we?
This is about, mate, all my questions about photography.
Are they? Oh, okay. In that case, let's stick with photography again, but in a bit of a more fun way. Andy's going to do something. He suggested this thing. It's a great idea, which is, I'll let you explain, actually. Andy, you explain, mate. Go on.
Yeah, so I just thought it would be a good way just to ask a few questions to the boys, just to see if we can get to know them a little better. So a little game called Never Have I Ever. It won't be too smutty. It won't be dodgy. It won't be... I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, unless you want to throw yourself under the bus. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and the rules are, I'm going to say a statement, and if you are guilty of that thing, then you just have to take a little drink of your... you know, 10% beer or whatever you got, or your cup of tea, whatever you've got. So, for example, I could say, and sorry in advance, Gary, never have I ever, or I have never soiled myself during a photo shoot. So if you have, you take a drink, okay? Right, so let's start off nice. And if you want to explain, if you have done that thing, you can explain. Yeah, okay.
So we don't have to explain if we don't want to. We can just drink and just keep quiet.
Yeah, but your silence will speak volumes. Yeah. Okay, so a few of these ones I've done as well, so I thought I'd include myself. So the first one, I have never cleaned my sensor.
Right, sorry, so I have cleaned my sensor. Do I drink or not?
No.
No, drink if you've never done it.
Right, okay, sorry.
Hang on a bit. Had it done by somebody else. I've not actually done it. Somebody's done it for me. Does that count?
Yeah, you got a drink.
Yeah.
I I reckon I clean my sensor and my camera once 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Really?
It gets so, especially my Sony. The EOS R that I've got, I haven't cleaned it once in a year, maybe longer, because it's got this shutter curtain that comes down to protect the sensor. But I just think the Sony is, especially the 6400 that I've got, is so badly designed that the sensor's just exposed as soon as you take the lens off. So I don't know if that's the same through all the Sony line or...
Yeah, well, I've got the 6400 and the A7 R3 and I have to clean mine on a but the first time I ever did it, I was terrified, absolutely. And I, you know, like you put the solution, don't you, on the pad?
Mm.
Well, the first time I cleaned my sense up without putting the solution on.
Did it go...
No,
it was great.
I just couldn't. I was terrified of putting that solution on because I thought, say it leaves streaks and smears, and then I put all the camera back together again, and then like I put up with this little dust spot, and then I think about a week later, I thought, I've really got to do this, and I was almost kind of sitting here and had it all laid out, and it was almost like my hands were shaking, you know, as I'm kind of putting the drops on, and then kind of touched the sensor and just very slowly kind of swipe, and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. But once you've done it,
I don't do it.
Once you've done it once, it's fine.
Dave, do you do yours, yeah?
Never have, not once.
You need to drink, mate. Did you have a drink?
I did. I slugged a big drink of caffeine-free Diet Coke.
Nice.
I'm in a terrible state.
It's just, I reckon, just do it once and you'll be like, I don't know why I've never done this before.
I've never had any dust. So, as if I did get some dust, I would clean it. But I've never needed to. I spent 12 months with one lens attached and never changed it, so that helped.
I've never done it. I've never done it on any camera I've ever had. And this one's the worst one, but this literally Wednesday is the first time I've ever changed that lens on that camera while I've been out in anything other than a complete like vacuum, which I call my space here. I've changed it about three times. And every time I was like, oh shit. Because you're terrible as well, aren't you? It's like when you're changing it, you don't just go, you watch Thomas Heaton or someone and they go change and you go, which bit do I do first? I'm gonna leave this open, I'm gonna leave all of them open, and why won't you line up? It's an absolute nightmare. But yeah, I've never had I had a Canon 70D and that had a million dust spots on it, but the 5D 3 and this one, so far, touch wood, I haven't had a single dust spot on the sensor. So I don't know whether that's because I'm too careful or what, but yeah, I've been lucky.
Yeah, it petrifies me. Go on, moving on.
Okay, right, number two. I have never forgotten something or left something at the top of a mountain after I've finished the photo shoot.
I'm going to take a little sip. But that's not a full gulp.
Okay.
And these your filters?
Right. No. Go on, Darren.
It wasn't the top of the mountain. It was actually not far from Padley Gorge. I went kind of walking around there and my hiking poles was actually kind of on my bag. And I took them off and just put them in the grass and totally forgot about them. And I was staying at my friend's place, which was about an hour from there. And I thought, oh, crikey, I've left my bloody poles. Like, I know roughly where they were. And then I went back there the following day and thought, well, they'll definitely be gone by now. And they wasn't. They were actually still laying in the long grass, so I kind of managed to retrieve them. But apart from that, I don't think I've ever left anything, really. Not that I haven't got back, anyway.
Dave, looks like he might have a story or two.
No, it's really lame, actually. A couple of weeks ago, I left a 58mm lens cap on Clogwyn a Garrig.
That's enough. That's enough to be annoyed.
I was. Yeah. I looked everywhere for it, and I thought, "Oh shit! I must have left it because I remembered leaving it on a rock."
Can you shoot back up there and get it?
And jog
just up. Run up there. I've got something to confess. Sorry about this, Darren. Darren lent me all his gear when we met up, right? No, it's all right. It's okay. Darren lent me all his gear when we met up, and I was using the 70 to 200 with his camera. And he's got this white lens cap. So I took the lens cap off. It says 70 to 200 on it as well. Took the lens cap off and was merrily shooting away. Got to the end of the day, looked for his lens cap in my pockets and couldn't find it anywhere. And I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, Darren's literally just lent me this and I've lost the bloody lens cap already. And I had to put the lens, I had to cover the lens up with a bit of cloth and put it back in the bag. And I didn't say anything because I thought, I'm bound to find this in the bag. I was like, oh, I can't believe it. Drove home, looked through all through the bag, couldn't find it. It's like, God, Darren's lent me this and he's going to go mad because I lost his thing. I'm going to have to buy another one. I don't know where he got it from. I don't even know what he had written on it. Something was written on it. Oh, my God, he's going to know. And then I realised it was in, like, my jumper had, like, a little pocket in the front. And I put my hand in there and reached in and went, oh, there it is. Yeah. So I got away with it, thank God.
Oh, bless you.
Oh, it does remind me, I left an action camera and a gimbal and walked away from it. And it was only a week later when I thought, I'll go and make a vlog. Where's my gimbal? Where's my action camera? And I realised where I'd left them down on the sand dunes. It could have been, who knows? But I mean, it had been a week. We'd had rain. I thought, what's the point? I didn't bother going back and looking. I knew exactly where I left it. Yeah. So I sort of hope somebody came along and found it before it was screwed and are now still enjoying it.
Yeah. You know that famous view of Trevann, that, you know, with the lake running down and you've got Trevann, the glitters in the background. I was doing a time lapse up there 5 years ago and totally forgot I was doing a time lapse. I had like a knockoff GoPro and it was recording and I totally forgot. Went back to the car, I thought, I can't believe I've left it up there, so I had to walk back up and get it. I was savage. Oh, savage.
Mate. See, this is the problem. You're not as rich as Dave, are you? If you're as rich as Dave, Dave could just say, someone else can have it, it'll be fine. Yeah, no problem. But yeah,
it was a week later when I realised. But anyway, it wasn't a GoPro. Mine was a CCKO. It was a stop pro.
Or something of that ilk.
Or a Go Amateur.
I got one of them, yeah.
They sound like those. Do you ever have a pair of trainers back when you were a kid and they were called Nicks?
I remember that, yeah.
Do you remember them? Nicks trainers. They weren't like the Nicks. And there was another pair that you could get that was just called Air. I've got a pair of Air trainers.
Is that you wearing quite a lot of RDRs or something?
Yeah, you used to get them off the market. Used to get the old. And do you remember Joe Bloggs? Joe Bloggs all the thing, wasn't it? I can't remember what it was called, but there was a knockoff, and it was like it just sort of said like Joe Blags or something.
Joe Bloggs knockoff.
Yeah.
Oh god. Right, number three. Mm-hmm. I have never got to a photo shoot of any capacity and forgotten either my camera or a lens, something really important to take a photo with.
I don't think I have.
So have you ever got to a photo shoot and not been able to take a photo because of something you forgot? Shall I just tell you mine?
Yeah, go on.
I just booked a wedding. So it's my second wedding I've ever done. It's a friend of mine who got married in a lovely little village called, or a town called North Berwick, which is in Edinburgh, near Edinburgh. And I was at the time, my first camera was a 7D. And I'd thankfully got it in my head. Well, not actually, it doesn't help me at all. I'd always got it in my head that I need two bodies, two cameras to shoot a wedding, which I would still to this day swear by. So what I did was I went to Lenses for Hire and I got a 6D on hire for the weekend or for the week. And I picked it up, they got it delivered, and we drove to fortunately, we'd made a stop off at Laura's mum's because I'm from the Midlands, in York. And then religiously, every night, clean my sensor before a wedding, got my stuff out. Well, obviously, I didn't need to clean the 6D, but I was getting my line of stuff up so I know where it is and then pack it back in my bag. But I've decided to leave the 6D. I don't know if you've ever had anything from Lenses for Hire, but they give you you give it in a solid Pelle case, which is quite a solid, sturdy thing. Okay. And we went to Edinburgh, checked in, got there, was it 4 or 5 hours at least from York, I would have said, maybe a bit less, 4 hours. And just going through the last minute checks, checking my stuff, and I forgot the f***ing camera. I was absolutely so. It was 8:30 at night, and it was one of my best mates getting married. And because I'm so stubborn, I probably could have done the wedding on my own with a 7D. But I was like, I've paid about 90 quid to rent this camera for the week. Oh, no way I'm leaving that. So I drove in the middle of the night, set off at 8:30 at night, got back to Laura's mum's at 12:30. She'd left it in a wheelie bin. Picked it up, got back to North Berwick for 5:00 in the morning, got a speeding ticket on the A1M, which is brilliant.
Mate.
Well, I had about 3 hours sleep, got up at 10:00 in the morning, did the wedding, and it went absolutely amazingly. So it's become like a little bit of a ritual where I just need to forget all my camera gear before the night before. And but I got out of jail free, because if that was in at home from Edinburgh, that would have been 8 hours. I would have been a write-off. I would have had to do the whole day with the 7D. But knowing me, I don't know if you can relate to this, but when something's gone wrong in my world, I can't get out of this mood I'm in. And I just know I would have been in such a mood with myself all day. And I probably would have ruined my mate's wedding, because I would have been like huffing and puffing. Mm. So I drove out of stubbornness to go and get it and brought it. And then I did the wedding, and it fortunately went really well.
You see, that's why I could never do wedding photography. If you were to say, like, what is your least favourite genre of photography?
We might come on to that. We might come on to that.
Oh, shut up then.
Just saying, we might come on to that.
Did anyone
back, Andy. Why was it left in a wheelie bin?
Because Laura's mum was in bed. So she didn't want to wake up at 1:00 in the morning.
So she put it in the bin outside.
She's like, if you're stupid enough to forget the f***ing camera, you have to go in the bin to get it.
Got it. Okay.
So, you know, yeah, so it's your own fault. So,
take off banana skins, potato peelings.
Yeah, so there was Amazon boxes, yeah, everything. But
And to, just to say as well, you were like, I've paid £90 for this. You ended up paying how much in the speeding fine and petrol?
The speeding ticket was, what was the speed awareness course? Is that you have to pay about, is it 80 quid?
Yeah,
90 quid.
And then your petrol.
And my petrol as well. Yeah. So, brilliant decision.
But the wedding went well. That's the
but the wedding was perfect. And still to this day, one of the best pictures I took, thankfully, was on that camera. So, and it's still on my, still in my portfolio. So, yeah. Got out of jail. So I don't know if anyone else has ever been as stupid as that, have they?
No, I think that's got to be a winner, mate, there, isn't it, really? I mean, that's no one can beat that. That's
peak idiocy, isn't it? Peak stupidity, though.
No, I wouldn't say stupid. I mean, well done for rescuing it, mate. That's serious dedication.
Would you have done the same thing out of stubbornness, or would you have just gone with one camera?
I think I'd have been like you. I remember, nothing to do with photography, but I was doing a loft conversion, and I took part of this roof off and covered it up with a tarpaulin before I left, and I really kind of battened down the hatches, but the weather was beautiful. And then I woke up at about 1:00 in the morning, and the rain was bouncing off of my bedroom window. And I laid there just thinking, I know I've covered that roof. I know that roof's fine. Go back to sleep. But I couldn't go back to sleep. So I actually got up at about 2:00 in the morning, drove to this job. Now I'm standing outside someone's house at 2 a.m. in the morning. I've managed to get the big ladder up on the scaffolding on my own. They're all asleep inside the house. I'm trying to climb up this ladder like a bloody burglar. And then all of a sudden, through the tarpaulin comes a flashlight, which was Brian, the owner. And he went, who's out there? I said, Brian, it's me, it's Darren. I just want to make sure everything's fine. He went, we're all dry in here. I went, excellent. I'll go back to bed then. So I climbed down. So, mate, I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah. All's well that ends well.
Dedication for you.
Go on then. What, have you got any more, Andy?
Yes, I've got a couple more. Yeah, okay. I have never had a dream about another YouTuber. Again, I'm going to take one for the team and tell this.
Yeah.
Do you know James Popsis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So years ago, I bought his calendar, which is like when he was, I don't know, when he was 10, 20,000 subscribers. And I was watching all of his videos and I was getting a bit, you know how you get with new YouTubers and photographers, you end up binge watching them. So yeah. I went to bed that night and I dreamt about him. And I dreamt Laura ran off with him. So I literally have not been able to watch, well, until recently, I've not been able to watch another video. I've only literally forgiven him recently.
For something that he's never done. Literally only forgiven him for something he's never actually done. It was just in my
dream. Yeah, yeah. It nearly ruined my life. Okay,
did
then
Laura,
the next...
Did Laura watch it with you? Did he actually...
No.
Did, so Laura's never seen this guy?
She's got no idea who this man is.
Oh, okay.
So, she says... Okay, okay.
Hang on. I saw Dave had a quick drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was also told that I didn't have to say anything.
Oh.
You don't have to say it. It was that kind of dream, was it?
I'm saying nothing.
Okay.
All right. Go on then, last one.
All right, this is the last one. And this is a bit of a heavy one, so don't feel like you want to say if you don't want to say. I have never seriously considered giving up photography and selling everything I own.
Was that last week, Gal?
Yeah, last week. Yeah. It was last week. It was so bad. Honestly, it was. Do I tell everyone? The photographs from Padley Gorge were so bad. Like, I don't know how I got four. I think I put four in the vlog, and I got home, and I just looked at them and went, "These are just awful. They are just terrible." Two, I'm going to hold my hands up now, so I'm really sorry. Right?
Are you sure?
Yeah,
are
I'm
you
just
sure
my
you want
before we? Yeah. Okay. Okay. I put fog into two of my woodland shots using Photoshop. Because they were so bad, I was like, "What am I going to do? I can't do anything unless I make these look a bit more ethereal than they already were." Yeah, but after that, I spent a few days thinking. I didn't consider selling all my gear. I considered selling all my gear and then rebuying a Canon. That's what I actually considered doing. I actually considered going back to the 5D Mark III. Because I thought there's no way I would have taken shots that bad with a 5D Mark III.
But don't you think, joking aside, don't you think that's actually quite a good thing that you've got to a stage where you're just so critical of your own work?
Maybe.
I do. I think that's, you know, I know like we all get very frustrated at times, especially when you're looking at the back of the camera and you just think, this image is going to be so great. I'm so pleased with this. And then you get home and then you look at it on the big screen and you just think, oh, you know, I'm so disappointed with it.
Hang on.
Sorry. It's all
right? Sorry. Go on.
It's all right?
So we're only recording. Go on. Come on.
No, I don't want to walk. Will you get it for me?
Oh, you want me to get it for you? Okay. All right, hang on. Sorry.
It's don't happen on Parkinson, you know.
There was shades of that BBC interview then.
Yeah.
You know that famous one, yeah.
Yeah. Get out of the way, kids.
Does this happen quite regular then when you're shooting and you're filming people?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's normally mayonnaise, not salad cream.
Yeah.
Cheerio.
So hey Gary, what you need is
he's got
Adobe
his, he's
wife.
Got his bins in.
Oh, I can wait.
I don't know how we're gonna cut that in.
Yeah, what you're going to need, mate, is Adobe wife replacement tool.
Oh, brilliant. And it wasn't
Can I choose the replacement?
Fog replacement. That would be handy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I can't even remember what I was saying now. It's completely gone. But yeah, I was... you were saying it's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing, because maybe... A few years ago, I'd have just accepted those and gone, they're all right. But I was gutted. So gutted. And also really gutted as well, because my video, I felt, was awful. I just felt everything about that day. I felt the colour grading was off and the video was off and I was off and my photography was off. and I just wanted to stop. But actually, you know, I went back out again and...
I think we've all had days like that, haven't we?
Definitely.
I had a day like that, as you guys know, because I shared a clip that I recorded on YouTube and didn't release a few weeks ago when we were in the midst of, you know, there was a bright horizon coming with this Freedom Day, and I was so frustrated because I couldn't wait that long and I wanted to get out, and I went to a local woodland that I'd heard was had a little bit of potential, and it was the middle of the day, so I thought, I'm not going to take the big camera, I'm just going to go with a vlogging camera and just sort of take make a vlog about scouting, you know, something like that. I know it's been done loads of times, but I thought I'll have a go. And I went through this wood and I did loads of pieces to camera. You know, I was literally chatting to myself for probably a good hour, you know, and all up and down this wood, and it was absolutely shite. There was nothing to take pictures of at all. It was just a really bland and dreadful, boring wood. So I walked back out and I walked up the path to the car. And then I did an outro because I thought I might still release this vlog. You know, if I'm desperate enough, I might still release this. So I did an outro to the camera. I started to talk. And then halfway through the outro, I thought, just get over yourself, Jamie. Yeah. You're never going to release this. You know, it's just dreadful. And I had a rant to myself and I said, look, what the hell are you playing at? People are just going to say, oh, yeah, well, it's good. You're good. You got out. You know, it's lovely you got out for a walk, isn't it? No, sod off. I'm not releasing this crap, you know. And I had a right rant to myself about that.
But do you not think, though, I mean, just going back to what you were just saying, Gow, and obviously what Jamie was just saying there, it was, you know, them pictures... Would you have been that disappointed with those pictures if you wasn't vlogging? Would you have just put it down to, oh, they just didn't turn out, yeah, and forgot all about them?
Yeah.
That's what you probably would have done. But because you've vlogged it, you've built up the expectation to actually show them images on a video.
I think the problem was, it was the first time I'd been anywhere for 4 months, because... 5th of December or something like that was the last time I did a vlog anywhere, and that was local. B, it was Padley Gorge. So you put yourself out there to go to somewhere that's a really scenic place. And
that anyone can get great photos.
Exactly. I mean, Mark Curtin, his photos from there 2 days later were brilliant. They were amazing, blew mine out of the water. And C, it was Freedom Day. It's like the vlog is about, you know, it's like the reason I went out on that day is, well, the reason I went out on that day is because I was picking my daughter up from university, but it was Freedom Day. That was the whole point of it. And so it was kind of like all of those things. I've got to get a vlog out because it's Freedom Day. I've got to get good photos because I'm in Padley Gorge. And I really want it to be good because it's the first time I've been out for 4 months. And I got home and... Like, the worst thing was, is I'd spoken about several other photos and they were all awful. They were all, and all the ones that I looked at and thought, oh yeah, this one will be all right. It was all, they were dreadful. Mm. And so I sat there for a moment and thought, can I really even put this vlog out? I don't know. And then Photoshop, you know, fog came to my rescue and I went, yes, I can put it out. It's fine.
Did anyone notice?
No.
They will now.
They will now, but that's fine. Good.
Because yeah, but you've got another vlog in it then, now, haven't yeah. you? You've now got a vlog about how to salvage a crap picture.
Yeah.
with Adobe Fog replacement. Little art.
Honestly, even after the vlog was released, I still looked and went, these are probably the worst photos I've taken for 2 years. You know, landscape photos I've taken for 2 years. And... everyone was really nice and said, you know, nice photos, nice vlog, but I still felt they were the, you know, I still looked and thought, oh, but after this last trip, I feel a lot happier. So, you know.
But doesn't it, on the plus side though, you know, all joking aside, doesn't it indicate your own progression as a photographer, that your self-critique muscle is still flexing and you're looking at it with a critical eye? And looking at, and you know, it's not like you're looking at it and you're deluded. You know where the improvement needs to come in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that yeah. signifies a skill set that is better now than it was 12 months ago and 24 months ago.
I think as well
ago.
It's something that a lot of people do. When they don't go out a lot or haven't been out for a while and they go out and they forget things like the shots, I looked at the shots and I focused on what was good. So I looked and I went, oh, lovely running water here. But when I got home and looked around the image, I was like, that's messy, that's messy, that doesn't fit. It's in the, you know, the composition's wrong. And so I looked at it and went, oh, lovely running water. Whereas if probably if I'd have gone out, if I'd been going out every week, I'd have walked past that one and gone, no, because this isn't right about it and that isn't right about it. But because I've been out for such a long time, you kind of get seduced by the good things about the shot. You know, I looked at another shot with, I'm trying to think of the photos I put out now. You look at a shot with the trees and you think that tree looks nice and with those trees doing that. But then actually when I looked at it again, it was really messy in a place, you know, there was, didn't quite work out here and there was another part of it. But you're not looking at those because you're not, you're so, oh, I'm out, I'm taking photos. It's almost like you sort of forget to be critical about the compositions you're taking, you know. So, yeah, it's a lesson learned, but it's not a bad thing, really, I don't think.
No, I don't think it is at all. But I think the vlogging has a lot to do with it.
Definitely.
You know, it really does. Yeah. It puts you under a lot more pressure, you know, especially when you've spoke about, you know, you've gone out, you've videoed yourself, you've pieced a camera talking about this. And then the images don't quite live up to your expectations. You just feel kind of really dejected.
Yeah. But Andy, your style of vlogging is different, isn't it, to maybe ours? And because you, well, traditionally, you've sort of been more of a lifestyle vlogger, haven't you? You just sort of vlog your lifestyle. You'll vlog what you're doing on the day. You'll vlog your trips out, your times of law and the rest of it. And yes, there's certain times when you'll do proper landscape photography vlogs or wedding vlogs or whatever, but generally it's a lifestyle vlog. So it's not necessarily about the quality of images that you produce, it's about the quality of the day you had, I guess, and what you experienced.
I guess, yeah, I don't know. I always think that it's something that I quite like to watch. I don't know why, maybe it's just my inquisitive nature, but I'd much rather watch any of you for a day in your life than I don't know, you talk about photography. I just love people. I love how they work. I love what drives them. And I guess that's what I'm trying to show, is what drives me, really. And that's the reason that I like doing it. I like to put, in my photography anyway, heart and soul really into my photos. And hopefully that comes across because of, I love the Malvern Hills. I love, I don't know, going up the hills after work or before work or, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I guess lifestyle is very much built into it. I don't quite know what it is. It's just, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a huge fan of Casey Neistat. And he, for me, is just the godfather of vlogging. And I just love the way he would just make the... I love this phrase. He would find meaning where there is none. Do you know what I mean? When sometimes you're doing a vlog and you've got nothing to talk about, and he will just pluck some philosophical thing out of nowhere. And that's what I just try and do. Like I like to show people my hobbies and you know, if I'm doing a bit of woodwork in a garage or if I'm going for a jog around the river or sort of thing, I like people to know that there's more to me. I hate to say it, but there's more to me than just photography, really. So I guess that's what I'm trying to aim for, I guess.
Casey Neistat is a story, isn't it? He pulls a story. So every vlog he does, it can be, that's his gift. He pulls a story out of the mundane.
Yeah.
And every vlog has something. You know, there's something going on. And yeah, you're right. You're not a typical landscape photography vlogger, because a lot of your vlogs aren't about landscape photography, but you are essentially built around photography.
Yeah,
that's kind of it. But you're not your typical photography vlogger. There's more, isn't there?
I guess if somebody asked me what I did, I'd say I was a photographer. I wouldn't say, because that's one of my things. I don't specialize. I'm not good enough, and I know that. I'm comfortable with that. I'm not good enough to specialize. So that's why I do things like property. I do weddings. I do portraits. I do headshots. I do a bit of everything. And the landscapes, you know, exploring the Malvern Hills, that will be my forever project.
Yeah.
But the landscapes will always be a hobby for me. I don't think it will ever come to a point where it will ever become my job. Maybe I could get a book out one day, or I don't know, a calendar or something, I don't know, for people to have. But yeah, for me, it's more about the fun of it, and it's more about, yeah, living day to day. Because without getting too hot and heavy, it's like life is finite. Life is too short. We've realized that over the last, you know, just over 12 months, how bad it can be. So yeah, I do quite like to show, you know, I had a look at, weirdly, one of your old videos popped up for me the other day. Oh, a chat with Dave in 2018 or 17. Ooh, when you,
yeah.
Yeah, and you were going through a few people, and Daz popped up on that when he was going on about the coat one.
Yeah.
In Ambleside. Oh, I thought that was absolutely wonderful. For me, that is YouTube gold. I just love that stuff. So that's the sort of stuff I want to create, because it's personable. It makes people understand the character a bit more. And then when you introduce photography into it, you've already got the audience who hopefully understand a little bit more about you. And they understand a little bit more about why you're taking that picture. And before I go off on a big tangent, it's a bit about, without sounding wanky, it's about finding the why, isn't it? Why you're doing things, why you're interested in landscapes. And for me, it's just, I mean, Dave, I remember you mentioning in the last video about, I don't know his name, the Norwegian guy,
Oddbjørn.
Yeah, you said that it's just something you need to do. You just need to do it. It's just part of you. And that's it. I think that's the same, you know, for me, really. It's not something I make money out of. It's just something I need to do. I need to photograph the hills, and I love it.
Well, I think on that, that's the perfect place.
Definitely.
To say goodbye this week. Thank you, Andy, for coming on, mate. You've been brilliant, I've got to say. It's been a fantastic chat. And, we're going to obviously continue chatting, and there'll be another episode, no doubt. But I want to say thank you for you being here this week, and it's been brilliant. And, yeah, we'll all see you again soon. So, goodbye.
See you, guys.
See ya.
Bye-bye. See you, everyone.
Bye-bye. See ya.